Welcome to the Fireside Chat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Paul Sporer and Nick Pollock.
What is happening? Welcome to the Fireside Chat. My name is Nick Pollock, and despite it being absurdly hot, it is even hotter in here because we have the lovely fire. And of course, we are not going to put away our robes and slippers. Absolutely not. Because I'm joined here with the wonderful Paul Sporer. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Nick, we're destroying the planet because we have the AC down to 60 to make it feel cold in here so that the fire actually feels good. It's a real bad move. We shouldn't be doing this, but it feels cozy in here because
we handled that.
We did. That is true. Remember when the ozone was a deal? Like, that's crazy to think about.
And what's wonderful is that we fixed it. We had a problem with the planet.
I know. Like, that's incredible.
We did.
It's weird because, like, it was like very clear that it was a huge issue. We listened and decided to do something about it.
Right.
Wow, that's crazy. Anyway,
now what is AC going? So today,
what are we going to talk about? Yeah, we do.
We're calling this the quiz list. This is a wonderful thing, Paul. And Paul, would you like to explain to everybody what the quiz list is?
So think about once a month what we're going to do as a primary topic, because I'm going to jump into the list here, and it'll be at a time when I don't have a super fresh ranking out. My newest ranking is about 2 weeks old at this point. I would make a ton of changes. So I want to see where Nick's at on some guys and just ask on the high end, low end, where you at here, any concerns with this, any reason that you're not pushing this up higher, things of that nature. And we'll just kind of go through and pick your brain on some guys, because even though you do this every week and you do all the great work, you know, being there on the streams and everything, I know you can't deep dive all 100 players on the list every week. There's no time to do that. You have a great vibe of what's going on with everybody at all times, but I'm sure there's some guys that, like, hey, they're just kind of inertious, keeping them right where they kind of are. I haven't really done a deep dive on them. At least that's how it is with me. And so maybe I'll hit on some of those guys as well for you, and you can take a deeper look, and maybe you facilitate a change for the future and say, I might move them up or down based on that.
Yeah, that's always the fun of it for me. And obviously, right, doing specific deep dives, it's kind of, people ask us a lot about, how do you do the roundup? Do you watch all these games? Do you do all this? And generally, I have a system of, I will watch when things are new. I'm able to get a general sense of performance pretty easily from the data. And if there's something that, you know, from the baseline that I've established over the first, I don't know, last like 6 months, because obviously part of the preseason plan is to really understand each guy and really have that.
Exactly. Done.
And then the season arrives and they change. They do different things. And so I'm monitoring what those things are. I'm really lucky that all I have to do is starting pitchers. So well, I can be as studying as much as I can, and I write the roundup every night, which then just reinforces.
That's the thing too. The roundup is those deep dives, and you are really good at taking a snapshot of that data and really distilling it like right away. I can like look at that baseball savant breakdown, but then I don't instantly process unless there's like a huge spin or velo drop. Everyone sees that, but you assess that very quickly. I think that's a skill of yours too that helps you stay on top of everyone, because like, even though you don't do a 100 deep dive or a deep dive on all 100 guys, you're on where they're at. And that is really hard to do, because you really have to be in touch with about 150, 160 guys because guys are in and out. You know, you have to know where guys are, you know, because you don't rank injured guys, which I totally agree with. But let's see if we can find some guys that maybe you're thinking a little bit deeper on and where you're at, or just to uncover some information for the folks that like, hey, I am curious where you're at.
Yeah, that's lovely. And I'm going to do you guys a solid here. I made the pitchless player pages so that I could do any podcast super quickly. Essentially, if you are a podcaster and you're not using our player pages to quickly understand what a pitcher is doing, like I showed this to Yancey, and Yancey goes, oh, you just made the site for podcasters.
The tools that you want. Yeah.
Yeah.
As a podcaster.
I'm so quickly. I'm like, well, right. That's pretty much how everyone should have it, right?
That's exactly
I'm not going to do that. I'm gonna tell you my first initial gut reaction, and then I'm going. This is why it's the quiz list, guys. I'm gonna have my hands up the entire time. So
you're not even gonna get in. Okay.
I'm not gonna get in, and then I'll do it after. Imagine Sporer might say, "Huh, Nick, that's not right. That's this and that." So pure quiz list this time. I'm looking forward to this.
Let's start near the top here, not at the tippy top. Wheeler, Glasnow, Skubal, love that. Yeah. I do love the Chris Sale thing, and I am bringing him up because of the clunker, not because I am concerned, because I, like you, am not moving off of Sale at all. Bad outing is a bad outing. I am more curious a little bit more in the long term. Now, we've talked a lot on this show about not going too deep and say, I'm not going to say rest of season. I don't know. You don't know what he's going to do in September. I don't know what he's going to do in September. But you're at a point right now where Chris Sale is back to you, and you are trusting him as a bona fide ace. And bona fide aces, we let have a blow up and we don't blink, because he moved his ERA to 306 and his WHIP to 095. At age 35, Chris Sale is back for you. Is that correct?
It's more that there are a few guys doing what he's doing right now. And actually, I would even say he's not totally back because, like a Chris Berman, because he's not really as amazing with his changeup. It's returning more. It's also not at like 97, 98 on the four seamer as we've seen in the past. That said, his striker is amazing. Strike minus ICR rate. I believe it's in top five of the majors of all starting pitchers. So he throws a ton of strikes and he limits hard contact. And when it comes, I think the biggest negative we had, we never really thought that Chris Sale was going to be bad when he pitched. It was more of just how much are we going to see? How much is it going to fluctuate just based on his own health?
Yes.
And if there's one thing I think I'm taking away the most from this year, and I think I try to every year, but there's always pushback about it. And it's the hardest thing we do is just predicting volume for players in the next year. Mm-hmm. And when you see this with Glasnow and you see this with Sale, I'm throwing it out the window really at this point. It's already June. It's already been two months, four guys to get injured. They aren't now. Anyone can get injured at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure, like Glasnow and Sale, I obviously still have a little extra ding in my mind about. And the thing is, you know, Gerrit Cole and Clark Schmidt were the two guys from the Yankee rotation that were supposed to be healthy.
Yeah, they were the 400 or the 370 innings that they were going to get.
Not Stroman, not Keel, not Rodon, not Cortez. Yep. Who's in that rotation right now? So the thing
that make yourself sick trying to figure it all out with the injuries. So I agree of neutralizing that field more and not getting hung up on whether or not Sale's going to break down, because everyone will come out and be like, oh, we knew he was going to. That's just the nature of it. Because no, you don't know. And I'm willing to bet on the skills of guys like Sale and Glasnow, because all pitching breaks.
Exactly. And what's really funny is Paxton is still healthy.
I know. He's walking quite literally everyone, but he is still healthy.
Can you believe it? But anyway, also Hunter Green is the last bastion of 98 miles per hour or whatever it is from Enosaurus's chart of the top 10 velocities from last year. Yep. Cole Reagan's underneath it, thankfully. Oh my gosh.
Who's that?
Cole Reagan's
Yeah. You don't need to throw that high. Keep it one extra mile or two lower.
But anyway, with Chris Sale, he's just doing amazing for a winning ball club.
And yeah, when that's I looked at the top 10,
it's a lot of them had some concerns or stuff. I did put Scooble above, understandably so. Cole Reagan's, as I mentioned, does not have his cutter and his slider working. He's going four seamer changeup right now, and it's a little annoying. However, that four seamer is working well with that changeup at the moment. I think he'll have the ICR drops and fewer hits once the slider and cutter, really the cutter, becomes what it's supposed to be. But those are hangups for him. Yamamoto, I still feel like he needs to throw more high four seamers. Also, there's something to be said that he doesn't go as often as Sale. The Dodgers in this smart thing of going six man, I think that every team should be six man.
Well, and they're going to get a bunch of pitchers back, and they're going to get pitchers, right? Like, there's just no world where they don't pick up a couple arms too, because even if those arms come back, they know you need 10. Yeah. You know, five doesn't cut it.
Yeah. And by the way, how do you feel about this? I think my whole solution for the injured pitcher thing is that you need to have six starting pitchers on your roster.
I mean, we're getting almost there. We're pretty much almost there anyway. It's probably time to just kind of, you know, standardize it a bit. Obviously, there's nothing set in stone, but, you know, if all the teams start using six just kind of more traditionally, you know, maybe that's where we need to be and lower. Yeah, because
minimum again, 5 days rest.
It's not that they can't go 300 if we wanted, but we don't train them to. We train them to empty the tank every fifth day. So I do think downshifting there, even though it would make the pitching landscape even tougher with fewer innings, it'd probably be better for the health. I think that might have a tangible impact, because keeping guys healthy has just been so impossibly difficult. I could see maybe a league-wide situation like that having a better impact. I mean, I don't know. It won't fix it. There's no magic gun, but I think it would help.
There's two parts to this is why it cures injury. I'm sorry to go into this tangent.
Don't worry. This is what the show's
two problems
for.
With why it happens, right? One, pitching is attrition.
Mm-hmm.
So how, as wonderful Stephen Lyman quote. So how do you limit that? Cool. Going six man means you throw less per year, just a little bit less. And maybe that does, you know, help it.
But maybe you go deeper per game.
Yeah, well, right. And then two, fun. Yeah, right. You can throw a little bit longer, hopefully.
Yeah.
And two, that's a great point. Another part is that you need a heal. You are making these micro tears. You are hurting each time. And I keep going back to the fact that a lot of Japanese pitchers do, you know, they pitch less, right? Yeah. They once go more into games, but they go once a week. And they say this is the day that this guy goes. So I think having a minimum of 5 days for any pitcher who throws X amount of pitches in a game, there's your answer.
I think that would be really cool to see something and a collective attempt at it too, yeah. As opposed to everyone kind of piecemealing, because none of that's working. I'm sorry. It's right. just no. not. It's not no. even denting things.
Right.
That's why I'm like, when a guy's healthy, like with Luis Gil, he's healthy, he's pitching, the bullets are there right now. Obviously, don't run him into the ground foolishly, but I totally agree with them not putting any restrictions on him right now.
Yeah, well, exactly. And there's no real evidence, as we've seen, of those. Like, I mean, I'm very much of the belief that you need to strengthen.
Mm-hmm. You don't need out
players to be able to actually endure a season properly. And doing a six man like this, I think, actually is the way to gradually gain it too.
Yeah.
So the Dodgers are doing something really smart with us to bring it back here. Yamamoto isn't going to go as much. And you can say, well, Glasnow too, but Glasnow's just better. yeah. So there's that. But yeah, so when it comes to that top 10, Sale to me is in this perfect position of going 5 days, win chance, strikeouts are there, ratios are solid. That's why he's where he is.
Let's take it to the other guy who came over from overseas with Shota Imanaga. Obviously a hot topic as well. I know we're hitting some of the more obvious ones here, but I'm still wondering if you see the potential home run issue rearing its ugly head. Is there a regression coming in that 6.6% homer to fly ball rate, 7% homer to fly ball rate? Or is he doing things to help it? Because he's still a ground or a fly ball machine. Imanaga still puts the ball in the air a ton. There was concerns that he could get the strikeouts, keep the walks in check, but he's going to be a home run guy. I look at a 7% rate with all those fly balls. I tend to think those have to go up as the weather gets hotter and hotter and hotter. Where are we at on Imanaga, even in this next 4 week window, as we do hit summer?
Yeah, sure. Imanaga actually didn't pitch that badly in his last start. It was actually very similar to what we saw before with fastballs and splitters, and it did get hit. It's going to happen.
And Milwaukee's awesome. You need to start being afraid of Milwaukee, folks.
That's the thing. Milwaukee, we actually put Milwaukee in the second tier of offenses, maybe even the first for a moment.
Yeah.
I do an update on that every Monday. I go over it with chat in the morning, and I have my offense rankings, and this is a whole nother entire podcast, I think, is how do you actually judge an offense, you know? It's so hard.
And I only have simple things in my chart because obviously I have more stuff behind the scenes, but what I show is just last 30 day and last or full season ranking in WOBA, which is far from perfect. Very, very far from perfect. But it's something. I think you need something.
14 days are there too, I think.
Yeah, something needs to represent the more recent too. You can't just put their full season because teams run hot and cold. So that is important there. You know, but anyway, with Imanaga, go ahead.
Yeah. And we're also using PLV bot, essentially, or PLV projections to really actually nail down just daily what we think the lineup is and the quality of that, which we think is
fantastic.
I think over time, well, you just start seeing that more publicly.
But what about this one time I found that you projected for this and the opposite thing happened? Can you account for that?
You never look more like squints in that moment.
Can you account for that, sir? I will take you to the Better Business Bureau for stealing my money.
Oh, gosh. But anyway, with Imanaga, it is going to be something that, yeah, you're right. It's going to get hotter. It's going to get a little bit more home run prone as the season goes on. I still think that the four-seamer is amazing. I still think the splitter is amazing. And I think one of the things that gave me pause to really elevate Imanaga before was the lack of slider and curve really complementing. And I know that there are going to be times when he needs those. And that was one of those games. And do I think that means that Imanaga is going to always need it? No. Does it mean that Imanaga is not going to ever adapt? No. I wouldn't actually be surprised if he turns that sweeper into more of a cutter. Kind of go the Kodai Senga route of, hey, cool, fastball, splitter, but what keeps guys off of my fastball? Not the splitter, the cutter. So I think the year of the cutter is coming. I think it should have been the year of the cutter entering this preseason in the season. And I think next year is going to be massively that. So I'm not really worried about Minaga. The skills are still there with the splitter and the four seamer.
I'm not worried about him either, even with whatever regression's coming. I think where I'm going to start to view him, though, is more in like a Bailey Ober tier. In terms of statistical profile.
Interesting.
Great strikeout and walk rates, but a home run issue. I still think it's going to be there for Imanaga. I am concerned that the home runs will eventually go up, not necessarily to 1.6, but something where that will create volatility in him, where he's going to have those blow up starts, but the three starts in between, or three to four in between, are going to be so great that I want Imanaga. So
yeah.
I won't fundamentally change him, but do you disagree with that as a potential profile landing spot, or even Joe Ryan at the high end?
Joe Ryan, I'm with. Okay, because Joe Ryan is actually the comp that we I think both have had for Imanaga. So that makes more sense to me.
But he and Ober have similar statistical. I'm talking about the statistical profile only. High K's, low walks, high homer issue.
Well, the thing is, I don't see the same strikeouts for Ober. That I do with Imanaga personally for the rest of the year. I think
they've been equal so far. You got Imanaga. Cool. Imanaga has a 15% swing strike rate. So to your point, he should be somebody who could maybe be touching. I mean, the shorthand is just a 2x the swinging strike rate expected. That'll get you an idea, which means there might be some strikeout upside that you're seeing here with Imanaga.
Yeah. It's with Ober, I call it the Bailey special, right? Which is 6 innings, 200 runs, 7 base runners, and 6 Ks.
Yep.
Right. And I think Imanaga has potential for, those 7-8 strikeout games more often.
Okay. Ober, I can personally get behind that.
But I mean, it's also interesting you mentioned that, because Bailey Ober is in this tier of, he's part of the Guardians of the Hollies. It's like the Guardians of the Aces almost, of like, it's Framber Valdez, Justin Steele, and Bailey Ober, who are for me in that fourth tier of the Hollies. That then I elevate guys into the third tier if I feel like, no, they are on the trajectory of becoming a true ace. Ace is going to ace profile.
And those and I don't fall short.
Yeah, they fall short of it because of, I don't think that they have the overall electricity of like, I think that they can go like 7 innings, 1 run, 10 Ks or something like that. Like, okay. I don't.
So let me interrupt you real quick.
Boring. Please.
They don't have as much, because I thought it was going to go the other way. I thought you were going to say that their downside starts are too painful. You're saying their upside starts aren't hot enough to elevate Steele, Framber, and Bailey Ober. Okay.
Right.
Okay. I think that's fair.
So like, you see, like, Luis Steele has that ace potential of being like, dude,
absolutely.
Kill it, do that.
If he threw a shut piece in Boston on a Friday night, you'd be 0% surprised. But I think those other three guys, well, maybe Framber in the past has shown it, but this year so he hasn't been there.
It's like, but yeah, he is, you are more correct about Framber, I would say, relative to Steele and Ober, of the just the ceiling. Oh, so the floor is just like, oh gosh, okay, all right. Framber just drives me nuts.
Watching him, I can't. He's a guy I love in fantasy for the bulk and I to rely on. Watching him, maddening, and it's even more so for you because I mean, again, you can watch guys and know exactly everything that's going on with them.
I mean, I really have to mention the fact of doing the roundup every night. It gives me this weird memory, and also then reinforcing it with podcasts like these and the Plus Pitch, and then doing the streamer stuff. Everything I do is just about, don't forget the last start of this guy, Nick. With Framber, man, Framber is just, here's a sinker. Do something with the sinker.
Yeah. Good luck with it. And sometimes you can have good luck with it.
Sometimes the curveball is amazing. Sometimes the changeup's helping out. Sometimes there's a slider cutter that just like, nope, gone. But, it's certainly, I think Bailey Ober, Valdez, and Steele, 15 teamers, there's a lot more value for them.
For sure. And that's worth pointing out.
I'm very much of the feeling of, you have to do something to make yourself more above average in your 12 teamers to win.
Totally fair.
And I don't think that they are those guys necessarily. They are stabilizers. That's why they're the guardians of tier three. But,
I thought Ober could get there this year, but it would take a step that he hasn't taken.
Yeah.
It just hasn't been there.
Right. I mean, the new cutter slider is really nice for Bailey Ober. The changeup is actually a 6 PLV pitch, which is unheard of. Four seamer hasn't been as consistent upstairs.
Yeah.
It's been a little weird. He isn't painting like he used to.
And the counter would be Casey nicked him twice. pretty good.
I know,
that's
right?
The bookend of his season right now. Yeah. And he has a 3.02 ERA in the middle with 53 Ks and 51 innings. I get that. I'm a Bailey Ober guy. But I think Nick's point about he hasn't quite elevated himself to that next level makes a lot of sense there.
Yeah.
Imanaga has, to your point, and could continue to. So Joe Ryan, I do think I will land on that. However you treat Joe Ryan right now is probably how you should treat Imanaga, which is a pretty resounding positive because I did not have Imanaga and Joe Ryan's tier coming into the year.
Biggest difference, I mean, the thing is, Imanaga and Ryan, four-seamers are both amazing, right?
Yes.
We know this. What's actually really interesting about Joe Ryan is Just very quickly, what was it? 2021 was when he first came up, I think, in the spring or in the fall, rather. Maybe it was 22. I think it was 21. He was somewhere like 91, right? Mm-hmm. And then in 2022, it was like 92. And then last year, it was like 93-ish. And then all of a sudden, beginning of this year, it was like, 93.5. And then he sat 95 in his last start.
That's huge. Yeah. And if you round up, it's 94 average this year, 93.8.
And
for Ryan.
What's annoying is that Imanaga has a far better secondary pitch than Joe Ryan does.
Yeah.
And that's the difference maker to me. It's why I have Imanaga in that top tier and then Joe Ryan the second one. That said, you know, Ryan has more secondaries. But I feel that Imanaga does take that step a little bit higher just because the splitters super good.
And it's been so great that it's kept the home run issue that we believe he has in check. And I know it sounds weird to say that because people are going to look at his stats and say, what home run problem? I promise y'all, they didn't just make it up. He had home run issues in Japan. It was a concern that the way his stuff works would be prone. And splitters can be because when they hang, you bang. Like a hung splitter is gone, like approximately 98.9% of the time. Maybe that's not statistically accurate, but you get the point. So
we saw the one that hit through to a judge, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if it's landed yet. But I still love Imanaga. I want to be clear that any downgrading of him will just be kind of settling maybe a tier lower. Right now, he's running as a true ace, and I'm just not quite sure that that'll be there all year, unless the home run suppression just runs hot all season long.
Absolutely.
We got to talk a little.
Yeah, we got more guys to be able to talk about, I'm sure, about, you know, maybe I'm actually really curious who the next guy is, but Spore is going to tell me after this break. So, Spore, here we go. Round two of the quiz list. Who we got?
How could I not bring up a fellow Paul, a fellow mustachioed Paul S. in Paul Skeens? This is one thing I always like about you when you get the big prospects that come up. They don't have to wait and show you anything. You jump them right to where you believe that they can be in the rankings. I think maybe part of that, and you can obviously correct me if I'm wrong, is to spur folks into treating them that way too, so that they're maybe not getting scammed in trades or anything. Like, I know I've got this prospect, Paul Skeens, but I don't really follow. Nick Pollock ranks him 68th because he hasn't done anything yet. No, Nick Pollock ranks him 14th. And maybe you don't go out and demand Freddie Peralta for him in a trade, but you know to hang on to the guy. So I think maybe, you know, you're putting them there because you believe in the rankings. I'm not saying you're doing anything ulterior motive, but it also reinforces people to treat those players properly. Not everyone does fantasy for a living and knows who Paul Skeens is like the back of their hand, but there's very good fantasy players out there that don't keep track of prospects because they're in an 8 or 10 team league and they don't have to. So talk to us a bit about Skeens jumping into the top 15. Right away. Is he as good as advertised and can he be a fantasy winner down the stretch?
Yeah. So what's really nice is actually, if you remember, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, I mean, even I think about this a lot, entering 2023, I remember being in Florida. I've told this story before, but I looked at the Dodgers rotation and I thought, my gosh, they're going to need help like right away. Who is the best Dodgers pitching prospect? And I didn't know them. I didn't know who they were. So I remember going to James Anderson, be like, James, I'm telling you, Michael Grove. It's got to be Michael Grove, right? It's not Gavin Stone. He's a changeup guy. Michael Grove, he's the one. He goes, I don't know. Because he did really well in like 2022. Oh, maybe, whatever. I just didn't know who Bobby Miller was.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I just didn't, if I knew Bobby Miller, obviously it'll be like, guys, Bobby Miller is going to bring
the answer
because it's going to be him and all that kind of stuff. Okay. So what's really nice now is AAA data is all in StatCast.
Yes.
And not only that, we have in the behind the scenes here at PitcherList, I have a AAA PLV card.
Ooh.
So I get to actually find out a little bit about high adjusted VAA. I get to essentially find out if these pitches are actually good or not.
Yeah.
Before they show up in the majors. So what used to be the case for me is you have a prospect pitcher come up and I wouldn't know anything about them. So I would throw them into your mystery box 60s or so. Mm-hmm. I would just say, look, like these other guys are not very good and you might as well just try the mystery thing. And I certainly get that still. Like if it's not AAA, I don't have data.
Of course.
So Schwellenbach showed up. I'm like, I don't know. I watched a little bit of him, read some things like, okay, mystery box kind of thing. Maybe that works. Right. We have DJ Hers going and I don't know what it is yet. It's going tonight. You're going to hear this tomorrow. So
was Mazur in AAA?
Mazur. Yep. Mazur. I don't really love Mazur.
Okay.
I think he's more command focused and I do not go after command focused guys.
Correct. That's the big 12-15 team difference again that we always highlight because guys like that can eat up some nice five, six inning outings can be valuable.
The thing. I have this thing called the shag rug, which I came up with last year, which essentially says the young man's floor. Okay.
That's really funny.
Where every single rookie pitcher has a floor that's lower than veterans because they will just all of a sudden I'm not experienced and I'm not going to be able to get out of these situations as much as veterans are. That's just kind of how it is. So every prospect pitcher coming up for me to justify that shag floor, they need to, or shag rug, they need to have, they need to have skills that are worthwhile. So if you're a command guy, that ceiling is capped and the shag rug still exists. I generally don't go for that.
Yeah.
And Mazur, sure, throw like 94, 95 on the fastball. It's not a quality one. So it's really reliant on locating that and then cutters and sliders, from my understanding, and it's fine.
Yeah.
It's okay.
It appears to be a little more than that.
But yeah, I hope he's great. Thumbs up, but I'm not really chasing him. You can spec at him if you want. I have him at 100 on the list because that's always the fun one. But with Skeens, I got all the data. I got all the fun stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was able to watch him and I'm like, yeah, this guy throws like 100. And he has this thing called the Splinker, which is apparently like amazing. And also another six PLB pitch thus far. And it's crazy. I mean, the thing is, you will see this a lot from us. If you're able to throw an unbelievable like changeup secondary for strikes, is paired off of what we like as a fastball, that pitch is always going to be amazing, and especially if you get strikes with it, which both Bailey Ober and Skeens have done. And there's also a really good slider. And I actually, this is as fast of an AGA that I've ever given any pitcher.
Yeah.
Because
that's why it stood out.
Let's be honest though. It's one of those things you watch him, you go, yeah, you're not giving this up. Like this guy, you expect him to dominate every single time he's going against the Dodgers. I'm going to start him against the Dodgers.
He's so good. He didn't come out against anybody.
And what's crazy, did you start him in his MLB debut? Did you have him on a team to start him?
Yep.
Did you do it? Did you start him?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. How'd he do?
Fine.
No, he did not have a good MLB debut for your fantasy teams.
Well,
he had four innings of four runs.
No, yeah, that's right. Yeah. I'm thinking of Scott. Sorry, but I start the top prospects. I start the top prospects.
That's the thing is I was like, hey, you should probably still do it. It's a crazy thing. MLB debuts, in my view, are just generally worse because there's
because stuff going on. They're overamped. Right? Like there's just too much to figure. So do you generally sit them for that and just take the break?
I always have them like two rankings down is what I
got do. It. That makes sense.
So I think
the adrenaline
would be dope against whatever, but and it was an easy matchup. I don't remember what it was, but it was, I put him in the questionable start tier.
Because the hype is just off the charts and you don't know how everyone's going to deal with that. And I don't blame anybody for being overwhelmed by that.
Off. Command is generally off. And also what's crazy, the first inning is so tough. If you get past the first,
already
generally fine because hitters are tuned in to when they are behind, they will go fastball.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens. So you see more home runs in the first inning against MLB debuts than usual. I have this distinct memory of Steven Matz's MLB debut against Brandon Phillips. Knowing he was going to get a 3-1 fastball.
Yep.
And he hit it out. And I'm like, of course, because that's what it is, right? Just get natural. Here's a fastball. Brandon Phillips is smart. Bam, done. So MLB debuts, you don't do it. And then I wait for the second one. And that cup start was just so good. And then the next one was so good. And like, he just moved up. So he's at 14 right now because, he's above Jared Jones. Because let's be honest, if you have Jared Jones and Paul Skeens, we feel more confident in Paul Skeens right now.
Let's just transition to him then with Jared Jones, because there is some concern right now over some starts that have been, less than stellar. Yeah. I think it's kind of the smoothing out, kind of getting figured out a little bit, getting the book a bit deeper. But there's always more to it than just that, right? Like you're not just predestined to have some crummy starts. There are reasons that the league starts to figure out more. Where are we at with Jared Jones moving down just a bit? You still got him ranked very nicely. No one should be worried or jumping off, you know, completely here. But what do we think about Jared Jones in the near term here? Is he going to smooth out and get back up? Or is he going to face some struggles because X, Y, and Z are going on?
No, I'm actually going to throw this back at you. Jared Jones, last start, 0-for-31 whiffs, or maybe it was a 32 on his four-seamer against your Tigers.
I know.
I know you watched this game. You must.
I know. I couldn't believe. I mean, I was stunned. We had Skeens, Jones back-to-back.
Yeah.
That was the double.
Well, that's what happened. It's so fun.
Got both of them there. And crazy. Yeah, they were just jumping him. And the thing of it is they were getting hits because, to be honest, the Tigers offense is so bad. I was stunned by this. New God right now is Matt Vierling. He had a huge day. He ripped the big 3-run kill shot off of him. That was the real big damage there. But they were just attacking. And I think that's been part of their strategy. They're just not good. They've been hunting and attacking fastballs. So they finally found somebody to click against and happened to be one of the best pitchers going in baseball in right. The first part of the season.
So Jones did get unfortunate in that game too.
Of course.
There were like certain like errors or just really just weird plays in that one. And then of course there was the home run, but still zero whiffs is strange. And I'm like,
that's the part off. That I didn't quite understand.
Right.
And especially against the Tigers.
Still amazing. Locations were generally good. And the Tigers just had it. And honestly, I mean, I went away from that one being like, he must have been tipping something because this fastball just doesn't whiff like this. Sorry, not whiff like this. And it's the Tigers who have been whiffing a good
line. Exactly.
So I see that as a completely like, this is weird. I'm not listening to that one. And the other starts a little bit stranger too, but that one was like, no. So I still see Jared Jones as phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And it's against the Dodgers. And I'm like, oh gosh. But the thing is, yeah. I still have the Aces gonna ace label for Jared Jones. And that means if doesn't matter who they throw against, you are starting them.
Correct.
So I'm starting Jared Jones against the Dodgers. I could feel really stupid after this. I have him on my team. I have like all of these decisions to make of Bailey Ober against the Yankees. Jeff yes. Flaherty against the Rangers. Jared Jones against the Dodgers. I'm starting all of them personally. Bailey Ober against the Yankees. Oh,
I'm terrified.
I'm scared.
But I'm doing it. I'm terrified. You're doing it too? At least the Dodgers are running a little cold lately. Maybe it keeps going. They're 295 in WOBA the last 30 days against righties. So, you know, maybe he's catching them not at their best. But the Ober one terrifies me. Flaherty, I will say Texas has not been I got to go Flaherty because that Texas offense can get you on any given night, but their mash jobs have been very infrequent. Like they haven't been that great of an offense this year.
Mash jobs. I love that.
I don't know that.
Yeah,
no,
I dig it.
That's not a phrase. No, we're not popularizing that. That was so
Flaherty,
stupid.
By the way, his last start showcased like a small crack in the arm is what I'm saying about Flaherty. And it was just very small and it happens all the time. Like, one of the things that is really difficult is you start to see something be worse in a game. And it doesn't mean that it's a trend starting. It's one game. However, it can turn into one over time. That's why it's a small crack. You can repair it, you know? So what it is, Flaherty, his best skill is slider command. 100%. It's at the very bottom of the zone. High swing strike rates. It's just the nullifier for everything is the slider is just so constantly down. And he overthrew many of them. Same with the curveball. He actually had a sub 50% strike rate or right around there with that slider when it normally is like 60, 65%. So that could really just be like four pitches different, right? Mm-hmm. But to see that at all dip underneath is like, okay. Like you didn't have as consistent of a feel as you normally do.
Yeah.
And that's something to be a little bit concerned about with Flaherty, but not enough to do anything. Just be aware of that. It does make it's like, okay, I hate that it's the Rangers now. I'm certainly going with that one for Flaherty. I feel that as long as that command of the breakers is there, you know, the main thing with Flaherty is, okay, is your fastball super detrimental today?
Exactly.
And it hasn't been not, for like a month now. And it's awesome.
It's been fantastic
going up to the game. So it's been great. And so we just roll with that until either the velocity drops massively or the fastball is pumped down in middle like it was a lot in the first half of the year. So Jack Flaherty were cool.
excellent. Love Jack Flaherty. Glad he's doing well for my Tigers. I do think they can get a mint for him too if they don't turn it around and, you know, start falling off and have to trade. I bet they could bring back like a real premium player for Jack Flaherty. So we'll see what happens. I'd rather they do well.
List that's kind of like more 30 to 50.
That's exactly where I was jumping to.
Beautiful. What we got
next? So we don't need to be going all the way with all the top guys here. Michael King. Boy, has he been maddening. And I guarantee he's probably one of the most popular guys for I've missed his good and started his bad because of, you know, when you're in those shallower leagues, he is a guy that you can kind of have as a team streamer on and off the starting roster. Getting crushed by Colorado at home, of course, was maddening. Seven shut piece against the Dodgers was probably on a lot of benches. He's been up, down, but since Colorado worked him, three strong starts in terms of results here, 2.41 ERA and 18 and two-thirds. You've got Michael King at 42 right now. How are we feeling about him and what he's been through these last, you know, five, six starts?
Yeah, he's a Holly. Hollies are guys that are, I expect, as quality start machines with just solid ratios and like a 25% K rate. Michael King is the guy that we thought he was. And I'm going to think about that. What is it? Dennis something on the Cardinals?
Dennis Green. Yep.
Dennis Green. There it is. Here's what we thought we were.
They are.
What we thought they were. There it is. I finally got it out. Michael King, early part of the season, I think was going in and out of things. Wasn't really nailing down the command early on. We see the walk rate elevated, but like that was a weird start. That was just weirdness. And then he even mentioned like, cool, I needed to really do my whole reset and get back into it. Slider came back a bit too. And that I think if that rocky road start was just the normal game and wasn't just like, whoa, that was just strange. I mean, everyone would be so sold on Michael King right now because it would have, you know, it's the only interruption after the Dodgers start of seven shutout innings, right?
Exactly.
And even watching that, I was like, oh, this is fine. Like, he's not terrible. No, I see what we want Seth Lugo to actually be for the full season in Michael King.
Oh, that's very interesting because he essentially was part of the replacement for Michael King or for,
actually a really good point. I didn't think about that.
So
yeah,
for Seth Lugo, I should say, with King. Yeah. I had a hard time even at the worst moving off of him completely. Yeah. I just stayed encouraged. And like, after a while, I was like, okay, in 10 teamers, if you got to move on, I get it with the Colorado start, but I would really try to hold on. You know, sometimes you get that fence sitting take where you're like, I understand your situation might be different and you're looking to pull the cord. 10 teamers, I can understand it, but it was really hard to move off of Michael King in 12s and deeper because the upside I still felt was there. Let's talk about Walker Buehler coming into the tier 5 firecrackers at 45. Mm-hmm. Who is he?
Yeah,
What do we got? What's
so that's going on? Firecrackers are the cherry bomb, right? They can see how beautiful it is, but gosh, can they be loud in an obnoxious way?
Blow your hand.
And with Buehler is, I'm so sorry. I'm looking at my fantasy league right now because I remember that Michael King was dropped in my league and I was able to get him in one of them.
Wow. Yeah. See, and I get it. I shouldn't say wow like that because I do understand some of the cuts, but I had a really, really hard time moving on from him. And I'm glad that he's showing a rebound. He's
quality start league too. I'm like, guys, you don't understand what you just did.
Yeah. That's a tough move there.
And I had like the 11th waiver too. I was like, oh no.
So
no
one was really interested. Wow.
I got him. 12 teamer, whatever. I should win this one, and I just need to trade someone for a hitter, and I can't do it, and it sucks. No one.
You probably have that. I was about to say nobody wants to trade with you if you're interested in a pitcher. They're like, why are you interested in him? And you're just like I just want a pitcher,
Kanaga, King, or a hitter. Wu, Flaherty, Heel, Kikuchi, Bradley.
Oh man,
and I can't trade anyone.
That is amazing.
And a 12 teamer. If you notice, like I lost Spencer Strider on this team.
That's crazy.
I lost Steel, and I made it work.
That I'm just good.
Like, give me a hitter.
Let me get one singular hitter.
What? I've tried to trade Imanaga. No one wants. The best I had was Semien for Imanaga and Flaherty. I was like, I can't do that.
Okay, wait a minute. Gavin can get Flaherty too.
Yeah, that's why I was like, no. Like, it should be just Imanaga for Semien. This works, right?
Yeah.
I'll throw in a Reese Olson, but even that is like, oh man.
Okay, that I would have done. On the Semien end all day. See, if I get both those pitchers. Like,
right, that's the best I could do. There's Luis Heel in here. Oh, I had Christian Scott and tried to trade him to the Mets guy, and I couldn't do it.
I mean, two of those pitchers for Semien.
I know. It didn't work out. Anyway,
Walker Buehler.
Going back to Buehler. Buehler's a guy who his stuff is still really good. And by the way, I have not looked up a single player page. My hands are at my pockets.
We're on video. So
Bueller
up,
is lost right now. He's absolutely a perfect example of a guy that I want to try to, you know, with my arrogance, want to try and talk to a guy and be like, look, okay, let's just figure out what is your game plan right now? What is the information you're getting fed? Mm-hmm. Because let's just be honest with you. You have to make this simpler. You have such really good stuff. Like your cutter is a really good pitch. Your slider is a really good pitch. Your four seamer is like made to live upstairs, and you're not like the worst command guy. Like every time watching Bueller right now, I'm seeing someone who's trying to be so perfect and trying to do too much because he misses his time in like 2021. And yeah, it's like, no, man, just really keep it simple. But like, I'm just going to go in this general area, going to go in this general area and be like, just focus on inside the at-bats, like repeating the same pitches, like treat this like a rehab almost. And just only do that, and your stuff is good enough that you'll be fine. So over time, I'm going to believe that Walker Bueller is going to get there. Right now, he's lost, but okay, his stuff is still good. And you say, no, but he has sticky stuff before. Is it really? Like, it doesn't matter. Forget about the whole sticky stuff thing. Maybe that was part of his whole command, is that it's not just RPM. It's actually locations when mm-hmm. it comes to sticky stuff too. I don't really think that's the case with Bueller. I think that he should be far better than he is right now with locations, and he'll click in at some point. I just don't know when.
So we're sticking with Walker Bueller, maybe even trying to buy cheap if possible, if we can kind of just,
oh yeah, I'm definitely buying low for Walker Bueller. Yep.
Fantastic. Absolutely. All right. Let's do what? One more here.
Absolutely. What do we got?
How's about, you know what? You're wearing his shirt. Tyler McGill is in at 65. You're wearing the Tyler McGill
shirt. I am.
You know, he's talking about another guy I can't quit. He made that first impression, and I have fallen for it ever since. And, you know, it could be that commitment could be paying dividends here, as he has a 3 ERA through his first four starts, but a 1.24 whip, which is decent. But then 24 strikeouts, 21 innings. Has there been enough that's intriguing about Tyler McGill that maybe things click in and start to look a bit more like that guy who debuted so many years ago in 2021 now?
Right. So I am. You know, it's actually ties in a little bit with Mackenzie Gore, because that game yesterday stunk for both of them, for McGill and Mackenzie Gore. I'm a huge Mackenzie Gore fan. I think his four-seam is phenomenal. I think his secondaries are excellent. Secondaries just didn't get strikes yesterday.
You got me watching every fifth day with him now.
He's really, really fun. They actually had a really crazy stat. Second inning for Mackenzie Gore is like an 8 ERA or something, or higher.
Interesting. And then, I wonder what it is.
And then everything else is not. I don't know either.
He has a big come down after the big hype first inning.
I don't know.
And then
it's wild.
Resettle? I don't know.
Right? But the thing is, he hadn't had a single game above 300 runs the entire season.
Yeah, Gore had been amazing, and then the freaking Mets get him of all teams, and just like, come on. But hey, that's divisional as well. You know, guys can, you know, so it happens.
Also, seeing Mackenzie Gore's face when he allows a hit, he's like, what? How did that happen? Like, I don't know either, man.
I'm amazing. Why did that go there? But McGill was not much better. Five innings, seven hits for him.
So McGill went opposite, and what's so cool about Tyler McGill is that we keep bringing up Ober. Ober's a really good foundational. He's such a unique pitcher to me, mm-hmm. where other guys have some of his skills and not others. And McGill is actually pretty similar to Ober as far as extension goes with his four seamer, but just not good IVB. So it's like 7.5 feet of extension, which is absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
That adds like 2 miles per hour, if not like three or something crazy.
And we should point out both he and Ober are ridiculously tall.
Right. Which is
McGill's 6'7", right? Ober's like 6'8" or 6'9".
But he's not like Sean Jelly, who doesn't stride. Like these guys stride. Exactly.
Some guys waste the amazing height there.
Like me.
Those two do not.
I certainly did that. I had terrible extension. So not flexible, but these guys are doing it. And it means that instead of Ober at like 92 now, which is also honestly like, whoa, 92 Ober. That's great. Not 91. You know, this is like 95, 96 at times.
Yes.
So all Tyler McGill needs to do is get the ball upstairs. He's not. Sometimes he is. He did actually against the Dodgers, and that's what got me excited. But then he threw sliders and cutters underneath it. They weren't really exceptional, but they were strikes, and that's it. That's all he needed to do against the Dodgers, and it worked.
Okay, here's this a dumb one, person's question.
Against the Nationals, it was just bad command. And it's like, well, can't trust that.
So were you saying McGill didn't get the fastball up this start or has struggled with that in general?
In general.
Okay. This is probably stupid, so feel free to be like, nah, that doesn't make any sense. Stupid, yeah. Given his height,
yeah,
Do you think he has struggles with it, thinking that if he throws up, it's going to be too high because of how tall he is? Mm. And so finding that little adjustment to keep it top of the zone without coming straight down. Yeah. Am I making sense on that? Do you think his height plays into that on a negative way?
Or is the Tyler Glasnow problem, which is the, if you're too lanky, timing is weird.
Yes.
You have too much of an arm so that
I am too lanky.
Essentially, think about the, if you have a if you have a long piece of rope and mm-hmm. you're starting at the same point trying to get to another point, just think about how much variability there is with the long piece of rope than the short piece of rope. And it just means that you're going to be more inconsistent, right? There's just more to move.
Got it.
So Bailey Ober has been actually surprisingly good at that.
Yes.
That could be the problem for McGill, 100% there. So okay. The potential is there if McGill does actually pinpoint the top of the zone. And then I think that if you just, I mean, really, if I'm Tyler McGill, I'm thinking literally just top middle of the zone. Every single pitch I throw should just be there. Every single, that's where I'm aiming every single time for everything. Throw your four seamer there, your slider and your cutter. Literally, I'm just throwing there and it falls off of it. Just tunnel off of this completely. You want to do the American spork? Great. Tunnel off of there. Just start everything in that one spot.
Yes. And work from there.
Maybe he's trying to do that. I don't know. There's potential here, but. You know, get some Marlins next, so I guess like that's fine.
All systems go for that one.
But I hope he can figure that out, Tom McGill.
All right, that will wrap us up with the quiz list. By the way, we don't want him to start this weekend in London. He's not penciled in right now. We don't know.
No, I think McGill goes. Actually, what's interesting is that McGill goes in a week. So
yeah, okay. So they are committed to. Okay, you said the Miami. That would be next Tuesday because that's good.
Yeah.
Because we don't want anybody pitching in London, and we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Later.
Yeah, we'll get to all of that, of course, later on with the games. And to keep in mind, if you have McGill, like it's okay to drop him for like 6 days or something like that. That one start in against Miami, I don't know. You might need a starter or two in the next 6 days. McGill is a perfect example of a guy that I'm not necessarily hoarding and turning down ways I can win my week. So
there you go.
Play that smart in your 12 teamers, but we got to talk about our games. We're gonna do that after this break. All right, Spore, we got games. Kind of uneventful from last week.
Yeah.
How did we do here?
All right. So things did not go all that well. It was just a 1-1 week. We each scored a point. So if you look at the streamers of the week, 20% or less over at Fantasy Pros. You had Jose Soriano, 9% at Seattle. I like that. We'll get to that in a moment. You only got 6 points from it, though. You got to get at least 10 points here to cash. I did cash in with Albert Suarez, 5% versus Tampa Bay, and he put up 16 points. So ding for me on that one. Sit of the week, they're 50%+ over at Fantasy Pros and 10 points or fewer. Gets a win. Seth Lugo, 90% at Minnesota, 20 points. Real good. Carlos Rodon, 84% versus the Angels, 19 points. Too good. So they both kicked butt. We've talked on the sits of the week. We're not saying you have to. We're saying it's a consideration. If you have one of those tight decisions where you can't get all the starts in, you might consider it. We want to be clear on that because we're not silly. Like, we know that those guys had a good chance to do well, but if you're looking for that tough sit, they could be that guy. Just want to reiterate that.
100%.
Star of the week.
Seth Lugo this week. I still feel like every week I was like, maybe I should put Seth Lugo as the Seth of the week this week. So,
because like, he's always kind of like in play, but then he keeps doing well too. Star of the week is basically a more high-end streamer. It's 50% or higher at Fantasy Pros, but they have to score at least 15 points to succeed. Both of them fell through. Spencer Schwellenbach, 0% rostered against the Nats. 50% or under. Excuse me, I said 50% or over there. 50 and under for this one. Schwellenbach, 11 points. Jose Soriano, that's right. I took him in Star of the Week after you took him in Streamers. I also get hit just 6 points. Our one-game matchup, just a straight-up mano-a-mano here. Ben Lively scored 17 points to defeat Mitchell Parker's 12 points. So you get the point there to keep it 1-1 and to keep us with a 1 point edge to my favor, 18-17 through 10 weeks.
Oh my gosh, it is close. Spencer Schwellenbach won. It's kind of interesting because I think he's certainly earned him his spot as a spec ad still against.
Agreed. I took away enough from that that I was intrigued, especially as a debut. Like you said, those are more difficult. And so I thought he handled himself decently enough, and I am adding Spencer Schwellenbach pretty much anywhere because the win probability comes in at a high level with the Braves.
Right. And what's interesting too is I was really tempted to make him the star of the week a second time. Just because I think this start against the Red Sox, especially with the debuts, what we talked about, maybe we do see that better command in the second one. It's 96 upstairs. It's 91 inside to lefties. It's 86 of a cutter, 86 down away as a slider to righties. There's also a curveball in the mix there, and it works. And it's, again, for Atlanta, that could just be a guy that you hold on to, and it works out for Schwellenbach. So,
and good start in Fenway would really put him on the map, because then you have at Baltimore and Tampa Bay. Even if you don't want to start the Fenway start, I might consider just stashing him for the two-step, because you know this weekend he'll be a higher bid. Mm-hmm. So if you do the daily pickups, you know, or with bids, which I've been in leagues like that where you have to do bids every night if you want to pick somebody up.
That's the way we do it in the Legacy League. It's way better, honestly.
Get him cheaper. Yeah, I mean, it's a grind, but like it keeps things going. Get him cheaper, Spencer Schwellenbach, and hold him, because on Sunday, if he does well at Boston, he's going to have a huge price with the at Baltimore and Tampa Bay two-step.
100%. So, Spore, this week, we are going to go with streamers who, look at us, pretty much
we're teaming up.
Idea.
Yep.
And, you know, it's interesting. I think I prefer mine over yours, but yours is a little safer. So
I think that's fair. I can get behind that, but let's talk about our concept here. We're taking a couple Oakland starters against these dreadful Mariners. Now, ideally, I think we'd both prefer righties. They are a little bit worse against them, but they're not much better against lefties, folks. They are just striking out like crazy, these Mariners are. And so I'm taking JP Sears, and you're taking Hogan Harris. So let's talk about these guys. Let's start with Harris. You say you like him a little bit more, and that I've got a little bit of a higher floor. I think that's fair. Talk to us why you feel that way with Hogan Harris.
Do you remember how many whiffs Hogan Harris had last start? Do you know?
No, I do not remember.
He went against the Rays on the 30th. He just showed up. I remember Hogan Harris last year was like a Toby. He's like, what did he do?
Yeah, I had recollection of him and everything.
You might not have known. He earned a gallows pole, which is the most whiffs on a given night.
Okay.
Last Thursday, fair, but it was 17 whiffs, 12 on his four-seamer.
That's nuts.
And you go, wait, well, how could that be? His four-seamer isn't very good. Well, 17 IVB. This used to be a 15-vert pitch. Now it gets 17 inches of vert. He threw it upstairs, thrown it at 93 miles per hour, and it just overwhelmed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now you get the Mariners. The Mariners, a team that completely falls over to high fastballs, just like your Tigers.
Yep.
That's kind of cool. So I'm taking
great
a
way
chance
to stay
there.
High.
And then Hogan Harris, of course, being that Toby kind of guy, he had a high strike rate on the curveball at 77%. Changeups weren't as consistent. But then again, also Mariners are really bad, the fastball changeup guys, which is why I'm really happy for a future pick that we have. So I'm super excited for this one for Harris. And I almost put him as my star of the week, too, just because like I think people are going to be like, whoa, Hogan Harris, what's going on here with this?
That will probably spur some intrigue. If he pops off with another gem here, I think we start to look at Hogan Harris in some of the shallower formats because he could be really, really nice in that instance. So keep tabs on him. I've got JP Sears, another lefty going up against the Mariners here. He's been doing pretty well since his 7-run run at Baltimore. You weren't using him for that anyway, so I don't really count that too hard against him from a fantasy concept, because again, why would you be starting guys like that in Baltimore? He's kind of going every other one right now, but the downside ones aren't that bad. So it's 0-4-1-4-0-4 on the earned run starts, on the earned run counts the last six. That's a 3.41 ERA. I would like to see more strikeouts, but this is where that should come. We know JP Sears can miss bats. He's done it before, and he shows flashes of it in the majors, but it has been inconsistent here in that good May, 21 in 34 innings of work. But he could get an inning, a strikeout per inning here against Seattle. In fact, he really needs to deliver any confidence for me going forward, because he does have a two-step next week at San Diego and at Minnesota, which in 15s I might consider more if we start to see that strikeout stuff. Even if it is inflated by Seattle, I will take some encouragement from that if he deploys his stuff. Because even if you have the greatest matchup, you still have to execute. So I don't like to take away from guys just when they do well against a good matchup, because plenty of guys blow good matchups as well. Yeah. So you do get the credit for coming through even when you're supposed to, quote unquote.
Absolutely. With JP Sears too, I think his last start, this is still part of the quiz, but what was really intriguing to me in his last outing against Atlanta is Sears only threw 26% four-seamers. Mm-hmm. And this is a guy who last year was just like, yeah, I only do four seamers. Hi, what's up? 50% usage. And that is kind of funny to me also that like 50% four seamers, like, whoa, only four seamers. Like that 3 years ago was everybody. But seeing a ton of secondaries, we saw a total of 38 sweepers and sliders from JP Sears in that game. 60, actually just underneath 70% slider strike rate. 82% sweeper strike rate. So kind of what? This is working? Yeah, it was against Atlanta, 400 runs, blah, blah, blah. But that's kind of cool. And I love this for Sears, especially with that four-seamer that maybe just wakes up as a late whiff pitch.
That'd be great.
It is a very flat one, 1.7. Height-adjusted VA is 98th percentile. And if he locates that thing upstairs, that can be incredibly good. So I like that one too. I still think Oakland's just going to trounce the Mariners, guys.
Well, we'll see. They can hit a bit. You know, they've got the home run issues, or not home run issues, the home run foundation for their offense. Of course, they'll be going up against good pitchers themselves, Kirby, right. Gilbert, Absolutely. And Wu. So, but we're going to go take the shot there with Harris and Sears. Sit of the week, again, 50% or higher over at Fantasy Pros, and they got to come in with 10 points or fewer. Who do you got this week? I totally agree with this one as a potential.
I think we both have strong picks this week. You say Kikuchi, and it's annoying. I so badly don't want this to be a sit. But 54% usage, roster ship. Kikuchi's going against Baltimore. Baltimore's better against lefties. This is not even in Baltimore. It's in Toronto.
Exactly.
And Kikuchi, the last two games, the story of Kikuchi is very, very briefly put. Slider was everything after he abandoned the changeup at the first game. Became great. Fastball, four-seamer, curveball, slider. Then all of a sudden, the slider's kind of like taking a step back last four games. And last two in particular, he's really utilized changeups instead of sliders. And I don't like that. I think that Kikuchi's just not as effective. Not to mention, last two games, the slider velocity has been down to 86. Now, you remember, of course, 11:35 a.m. game. Oh, my God, against your Tigers. Spore, that's why Kikuchi was bad. He needs like his 14 hours of sleep. It was just hand-waved that one. Fine. But then the most recent game, Kikuchi did get a little bit more velocity back and everything, except the slider. And that's weird to me. It's supposed to be 88, 89. It was 86 both games. I wonder if there's something wrong with that slider. And changeup, curveball, four-seamer can work for Kikuchi. It's just not as good as with that slider. So all those things combined to face Baltimore, it just feels bad. I hope he redeems himself. I hope the slider comes back. Hope it's a great start. I would love to feel good about Kikuchi again because the four-seamer is looking great. But
I want him to do well. I like Kikuchi. Like, he's not a guy that I have super backed in fantasy, so I want to be clear on that. I'm not trying to take credit now that he's doing well. But I root for him. I just, after a few years of things just not coming together, I've kind of moved from him. But it has looked so much better this year. In the home runs, I'm just generally afraid of home run issues. Speaking of, I think there could be a little bit of an issue here with my guy, Ranger Suarez. It's just because he's going to London, y'all. That's it and that's all. That said, he might not make the start because he got hit in the hand with a comebacker, and they might just use this as a perfect way to say, just take the break, come with us, hang out in London, but don't pitch, knowing that he could get crushed even if his hand is fine. Right. They have an easy excuse. I mean, they have such an easy excuse to just not let him pitch. So my backup one is a guy I do love, but he's going to the Yankees. Gavin Stone at the Yankees, y'all. You talk about home runs. And again, I love a lot of what Gavin Stone's been doing this year. I am not starting anyone but aces against the Yankees right now. Although, or maybe even semi-aces, because I am starting over, and I don't think he's quite ace, but you know, I don't want to start Stone, and I love Stone.
Ohtani and Yankee Stadium, man.
Oh, that's gonna be fun.
Stone to me is someone who hasn't been challenged yet. I'm actually really looking forward to the start just to see if Stone can step up or not.
If he stands up, I'm going to feel really great about using him. And I think you point this out. When somebody pops off on your bench, it can be a little frustrating, sure, but it's nice to have reinforcements. And if your guys are never performing well on your bench, you probably have a crappy bench. So I kind of like, you know, the idea of getting some juice out of the bench. You're going to miss sometimes, and it can be frustrating, but take solace in the fact that you've got the guy. You don't have to go bid for him now for $200 after a great outing type vibe.
You want to know something funny? Yes. On Saturday, in my head-to-head hometown league, we really close ratio matchups of like sub 1 whips and like a 2.5 ERA.
Oh, goodness.
Wasn't even aware of it. I accidentally benched three guys.
No.
Imanaga, Olsen.
No.
And Reese Olsen and no. Justin Steele. No. All of them blew up. All of them blew up, Spore. And I accidentally benched all three.
Accidentally are a and they're just like, freaking Nick, dude, how? How does he get, how does he know that?
How could he know? How does he not know? Okay, that's a prestige quote, and it's amazing. Great okay, movie. So we're gonna move on.
I didn't get the quote, but a great movie.
Oh my gosh, how could you not know? It's one of my favorite parts. Star of the week. This is fun. I was trying to find someone because I wanted maybe Hogan Harris and Spencer Schwalbach. Those are the two that I felt like, oh man,
I like your
those
pick.
Are the real ones. But then I realized, right, it's under 50%, and Brian Baio doesn't get enough love.
Agreed.
He's going against the White Sox this week. I'm surprised it's just 47% rostered. The way I see Brian Baio, it's pretty simple. Sinker that's always there for him. One of the better sinkers around. I would say in the top 20th percentile or so of sinkers from starting pitchers. And it's been change up most of the time for him with a slider in development. However, the slider has gotten there. Like the past couple of weeks, the slider is all of a sudden this dependable pitch for him. But the changeup wasn't there last time. And now it's the White Sox. And oh boy, this is a complete canvas for Baio to go off and just dominate with all three pitches. Everyone goes, oh, right. Baio is really good. I'm a big fan of the start, and I feel that Brian Baio is going to be a much more respected name after this one.
Yeah, I think that's a great call there. I really like Brian Baio. I am surprised that he was eligible at just 47%. I think people probably irked a bit by the lack of strikeouts, but I think he's a really encouraging pitcher in terms of like growth potential too. I really enjoy watching him pitch.
Yeah, he's fun.
So there's a little just like fandom there more than just straight statistical analysis. I think he's better than this league average type guy we've seen. For my star of the week, I'm going to go with Ben Brown heading to Cincy. Now that is part of the part that makes it a little bit sketchier, but I'm going to go ahead and go in there with Ben Brown, trusting what he can do. Yes, he is facing them for a second time, this time in a tougher environment, and he didn't do well the first time. I understand that, but I'm not taking too much from that start in terms of letting it influence me to not start him. It was one bad inning. The second inning, they definitely got to him a bit. 5 runs in 5 innings, 6 hits, a walk and 6 strikeouts, but only 1 homer. Cincinnati's offense is just not that good. And they're not very scary. That park is still scary, sure, but they strike out a ton. He's still got 6 Ks in the 5 innings. I think Ben Brown could have a nice one. And because it's in Cincy, he probably got put on some waiver wires this week after getting beat by them. People said, oh, I don't want to start him the next time against Cincy, and threw him onto some 10 and 12 team wires. And I would go scoop Ben Brown and start him.
Spore, do you know where I have Ben Brown ranked this week?
I don't, actually.
Because I don't.
I thought maybe that might be part of it. Let's hear it.
It's weird. I get exactly what you're saying. And actually, even I finally, guys, I broke the quiz. I'm looking at Ben Brown.
That's okay. Quiz time's over.
Pencils are down. 29% carry. I'm even seeing that, just like what those actual numbers are. I'm like, oh man, I probably should have just at least put him there as a spec or whatever, as a cherry bomb. The thing is, the reason I don't actually look up those numbers a ton, it's more about the trajectory and understanding what they're doing and how I believe in the Arsenal through start by start. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to Ben Brown, he breaks the Wasker rule. It's a 2-pitch where both pitches are not elite. That 4-seamer gets crushed. 47% ICR, 8% swing strike rate. But Nick, it thoroughly comes in at 96 miles per hour. I'm like, that's nice.
Velo doesn't guarantee success.
It's a steep angle. It is mediocre avert. It is mediocre extension. It's not that good. And that means that he's super reliant on the curveball. The curveball has been great. Don't get me wrong. 26% swing strike rate. That's really the home of everything for him. But just 2 pitches and also not really that stretched out. You have obviously a 9-3 pitches in that 7-inning no-hit game, but that's because he was no-hit. They did not want to throw him that much. It was 66 pitches the previous game. They probably wanted him to have him like 75, but he was no hit. So they said, fine, let's keep going. It was 76 in his last start, Ben Brown, against those Reds. And yeah, as you mentioned, one bad inning. I see it also as you need a third pitch. You need something else. So in general, I see Ben Brown as capped because he's just going to be a bit of a hipster. That said, he does have a lot of potential on a given night.
So you're
talking about the Reds offense. I'm probably overrating at Cincy, which is why he's off of it. So
no, no, I'm not gonna push too hard on that and say like you got to be open to this. That park still scares me. I still have a little trepidation even doing this, but I am going to do it with Ben Brown because Cincy just hasn't shown me a full reason to be afraid just yet.
Yeah, sure.
So I am going to take the chance here. There is a wide range of outcomes, but you got to have that notion when you're coming into any stream. So there is downside here. But if you're looking for a guy and you just can't find much that gives you any notion of an upside, I do think that the strikeouts can be there. Even if he is capped at about five innings, he could do enough damage there. And as long as he doesn't get beat up for four runs in an inning, Ben Brown can maybe give you a 5-2 with 8 Ks.
Now, I feel like I should just have this on a shirt. If I had to give one piece of advice to Ben Brown, what do you think it would be?
Three words. Throwing the fastball so much.
Okay. And instead, throw a cutter.
Know. Oh, okay. Throw a cutter. Yeah. Okay. I have a question though.
Throw a cutter.
I have a question on something. Yes. And I've now known for years to be very careful with these, but others may not be as keen on pitch values and like the value of them.
Yeah.
His fastball pitch value is plus 2.4.
Okay.
So be like, oh, the fastball and the curveball both work. You just said how bad of a fastball it is with a lot of statistical backing. In fact, you go look at his pitcher list repertoire page, and you'll see a lot of pretty uninteresting percentiles of where his fastball ranks in a lot of different categories.
Yep.
So that is why it's bad, but why does the pitch value give it some credence? Are the results on it better than they should be type of vibe? Where are we at with Ben Brown's fastball between the disconnect of pitch values positivity and your proper, you know, disinterest in it because of the results?
So you just reminded me of the days of the dark ages of where we were entranced by
yes
pitch FX.
We were shackled,
you know,
shackled to it. We were enthralled by it,
and pitch value is actually part of the reason why I create PLV, because it's just results based. It just says whatever the result was, we're giving you a positive or a negative based on the run differential of
got it.
So that could honestly be like you got a strikeout when the bases were loaded, you know, and that's going to be a
so you get value like as opposed to the normal strikeout. Off of that.
Or something like that, right? Which is why PVAL to me just stinks. It doesn't actually assess the pitch. It assesses the run differential of that moment of that pitch.
Did you do a PLV pitch draft this year?
We did not.
We used to do the PVAL pitch drafts.
We didn't do it. I didn't get it together. It's also a little bit tougher. I think PVAL made more sense as far as just a straight up, like the scaling and everything of it. Because also keep in mind, PVAL is... it's not going to do a lot of adjustments until an event happens.
Yeah.
They're going to be micro ones, but they're not as large as the actual end result. So we're going to get our act together with that. Essentially, I didn't, and it just kind of fell to the wayside. It couldn't develop a good game with it. But yeah, the PLV draft is super, super fun. But that's why
that'd be a lot of fun.
I hate it.
So yeah, Ben Brown, definitely some risk in Cincy, but I'm going to go ahead and take that gamble there, see if he can deliver a big one for us. Definitely agree on the two-pitch situation. I've just been more open to two-pitch guys because they've been, as a collective, I think, producing a bit better. Problem is, a lot of the good ones have two great pitches, and that's your big Wasker rule issue. Yes. Right? And his fastball is not good enough right now to sustain Brown.
I know. It's kind of wild. It was slider before, and the fastball got crushed. And
that's and then the wall got crushed by his, well, his hand.
And
got
we saw the good stuff of Wasker Inoue too.
Mm-hmm.
So
be careful. If Ben Brown even has a good start here, I'm not necessarily just letting it roll either, right? Like I think I'm picking my spots with him very meticulously, and then in the meantime, praying and hoping that a third offering comes through for him. Pardon me.
This could be a great game. So I totally am with you. One game matchup. I mean, this is an obvious one, guys. There are a lot of good games. Don't get me wrong, but come on, Luis Castillo at Cole Reagans.
Done.
I got the easy one here because, you know, Reagans gets to face the Mariners, and it's also in Kansas City. But then again, Luis Castillo is on the other end.
Yeah, so it's worth it. I'll take that. You know, KC, definitely a solid offense, but I love our boy Castillo. He is the reason that we do this, folks. We mentioned it pretty frequently.
Flavor, guys.
But yeah, this is fan service right here. These two guys, honestly, these two guys are both part of reasons. Like Castillo's why we started Fireside Chats, and then Reagan's just kind of carries that torch of like a guy that again emerged that had credence. People liked him. He was a prospect, but Nick and I were both obsessed with him, and we just want to have avenues to talk about guys like that. And so, yeah, Castillo v. Reagan's just made too much sense not to go with. We did consider Bradish Kikuchi, although we wouldn't have gone. I write these out before Nick puts his thing, so he would have wanted Bradish there, and I don't know if I would have taken Kikuchi.
Interesting one.
What's that?
I would have taken Hunter Brown. Would you have taken Tyler Anderson?
I would have wanted Brown, but I might have taken Anderson for the for the show of it. But I am intrigued by the Brown sinker switch. I loved Brown coming in when he was so bad. That's another one that I stressed and agonized over cutting. I just felt like he had too much talent to cut. But in the end, I was like, yeah, if you're in a 10 teamer, I get it. You can't keep taking these beatings. But he looks back with this new sinker switch in. But then we got Glasnow heel. Peralta, Reese Olson, Ober, Jared Jones, King Fott was kind of interesting. Brandon King, Michael King, Brandon Fott, and then of course Castillo Reagans, which we settled.
Would you have taken Bailey Ober or Jared Jones?
I would have taken Ober to make sure.
I would have taken Jones. Yeah.
Well, exactly, and that's another one where I would take either side, so I can be amenable to what you want. But I figured you would be an easier sell on Jones, so I would have taken my guy Ober. That would have been another one where you have a great pitcher, but I have the better matchup because I would have, you know, him going up against the Pirates offense.
Yeah. But so, then I also get to cheer for the electricity of Jones, so whatever, who cares?
Exactly.
Anyway, no, it's going to be Castillo Reagans. That's going to be an amazing, amazing matchup. Can't wait for that one. But I think that's going to be it for today. Oh my gosh.
That's right.
Oh my gosh. Spore. Man, you know, I got to get larger glasses or something. I don't know. I got to figure it out because we're just out of drink now.
I was thinking like large eyeglasses.
Eyeglasses.
A, you don't wear glasses.
I'll do that just
B,
for you.
Why are you getting larger ones? No, but yeah, you need glasses to drink.
As I've mentioned before, we are going to be transitioning to video for these in the future. And what I'm excited for the most in all of those is I will have props. There's a part of me that wants to have a different outfit and specific thing that I wear for each one.
I think we can make that work.
So I think we can make the robes happen.
I'm down to get a robe.
Yes, and expect that by around like July 1st at the latest.
There you go. We got a month.
So I'm looking forward to that. But Spore, what do you got going on this week?
Same old. Nothing too crazy this week. We got daily SP chart, of course. Podcast working. OTP. We have a monthly event called the PTCS, the Perfect Team Championship Series, where we have a bunch of tournaments on Saturday. You win big prizes. There's a big Mike Trout up for victory this week, and I'll be streaming that on Saturday on my Twitch channel. I'm in a couple of the there's 10 different tournaments that you can qualify for. I qualified for a handful of them, so that'll be fun. But yeah, just baseball all week. Very excited for the week to unfold. I can't believe we're in June. I really can't, but I'm glad. Yeah, right? I'm excited that we are. We're fully in the thick of it.
Hopefully the burnout that generally arrives in like a week is not hitting you.
Quick.
I'm okay right now.
I'm good right now. I'm actually at a pretty charged up moment, but you're right. It is that early June swoon where I'm like, I need a night off from baseball. And sometimes it's just like literally just one night, no baseball whatsoever. And I'll check back in. It's perfect to do on a Thursday. It's a lighter slate anyway, and just disconnect from the fire hose. But that's not right now because college baseball is going on with the World Series, and I'm very dialed into that as well. So I got the double dip going, and softball for that matter, Hook 'em Horns. Our girls are doing great. So I'm dialed in on three different baseball and baseball centric type sports there with the fire hose going crazy. So I love it right now.
Awesome. Well, that is going to do it for this episode of the Fireside Chat. Of course, we'll be back next week. Leave us a rating or review. If you're still here listening right now, they go a long way for us. And on the specific Fireside Chat Apple podcast, I believe we're still looking for some reviews. So if you do that, I'm going to give a promotion to you guys. I will give away a free month of PL Plus to anyone that showcases that they leave a review for this podcast there. So just go reach out to me on Twitter or on Discord and show me a image of you leaving a review on the Fireside Chat for Apple Podcasts. Or if you don't follow me, you can just at me on
Twitter.
But
an honest review. It doesn't have to be an honest review.
If you don't love it, it's okay. It's fine.
Yeah, that's okay.
100%. We just love to hear your feedback on it. But that is it. So on behalf of Paul Spore, my name is Nick Pollock, and it's always fun hanging with you by the fire.
Thanks for listening to today's Fireside Chat with Paul Spore and Nick Pollock. Follow both Paul and Nick on Twitter at Spore and at PitcherList.